So I had a very interesting talk with some people I haven't seen for many, many years. And we got to discuss ISKCON kind of history and a concept came to me afterwards that I have been toying with. You know, in this house, there are many psychological journals that come to us because of my wife's multiplicity of state certifications. So we get these journals. And one of them had as a headline on the cover of the magazine, Imposter Syndrome. Oh, I'm waiting for my translator, sorry. Now, this concept was very prominent. Not just the concept, but I mean what it was representing was very prominent when I first became a spiritual master. I felt like an imposter, like I'm somebody who's just faking it. In English, we say, fake it till you make it. That means that you don't know what you're doing, but you got to do something. So you fake it, pretend that you got it together, and after a while, you actually do get it together. But then, when I'm sitting in the temple room, you know, before I come in here, I usually sit with my deities for a while and just relax and listen to what they have to say. So when I was sitting in the temple room, the deity said, no, that's not true. The difference in this way of perceiving it is that an imposter is somebody who is consciously being something they are not for some kind of motivation or some kind of purpose. Now, I wasn't considering the issue from my point of view about how I felt about things. I was considering things at that time about how everybody out there would consider things. It's like, okay, I take myself out of this equation. I am no longer me in the same way I've always been me. I am now this new personality. And I am now this new personality for the sake of those people out there who require me to be this way. So this entire transformation was based in idealism, the desire to be of service, the desire to represent Krishna and give Krishna to you or anyone else who is interested. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a very idealistic thing, so that can't be that bad. So the idea of being an imposter doesn't fit. But the idea of being something different than me does fit. Okay, that's pretty similar to anyone who's ever been a parent. When the children are growing up, the parents have to assume this role of being very like the model, the shelter, the one who knows it all for the child. And usually when the children become teenagers, they figure out that's not true. Now, some teenagers say, yes, but we know why they did it, because they are our parents, they love us, they're trying to help. And some teenagers say, you're a fraud, you're a phony, you're bogus, I hate you. And very rarely is the focus placed upon the parent who sacrificed, or the parent who had to be something different for the sake of the child. Now, in other words, the parent is an individual with all of the good and bad in every individual, and the entire identity of the parent, when they are not yet a parent, has to transform for the sake of this new element in their life, their children, their child or children. And that is something that needs to be looked at. The effect that it has on the person who is now voluntarily or being forced to transform for the sake of another. Now, I'm not saying this because I want anyone to feel guilty. That's not the point. The point we're talking about is how I feel discomfort when having to be placed in that situation. I like to just be a friend. I like to share, but not everything. I like to say, I will share this, I will not share that. I will try to be of a service or be of assistance in whatever way I can, to the degree I can, to the degree I choose. So if I am being forced to overstep all these boundaries I have within myself, it makes me feel uncomfortable. So what's the lesson to be learned here? Each and every one of us, when we entered into our spiritual association, transformed, some even remain transformed, to fit a certain designed pattern of thought, behavior, or feeling. In other words, one may also feel as a disciple, as a follower, as an imposter, because I'm acting in this way, but I'm basically faking it till I make it. So we're basically having faking it till you're making it on both sides of the equation. So it's real easy to say, oh boy, that's all bogus, forget the whole thing. But then we have the problem, well, why did I want to learn this in the first place? Well, because I was in the material energy, suffering like mad, thinking, what is the use of life? Existential crises, needing something more than that, and all this nice, wonderful spiritual knowledge, this spiritual practices came and solved a lot of that problem. So how else am I going to get it unless someone gives it when I'm in that condition? So it's kind of a very interesting dichotomy that we have here, that in one sense, this is a very significant relationship, and on the other hand, it takes something from you. It's a burden. It's something that gives you a grating inside. So we, in our discussion the other day, we were talking about how in the early days of ISKCON, it was all just one big family. You know, we had our problems, sure, but we felt like a family. Not the greatest family, but it was a family. It was the same atmosphere I tried to establish or recreate in the early days of Eastern Europe and Russia, to bring the family atmosphere rather than here comes the spiritual authority thing. Within that family atmosphere, it's much easier to try to help or to try to direct for the safety and security and happiness of those who are in the family. It's more of a sharing thing. And those who are being directed need that direction and want that direction. And those who are directing are doing it out of love. When we are in a family, we don't think that much about the economic cost, you know, in that relationship. We think this is our role here. We have to support we're not thinking in corporate terms. We're thinking in familial terms. It's very different economically. In corporate terms, we're trying to make money. In corporate terms, we're trying to produce something. In corporate terms, we're trying to accomplish. We have to build. We have to protect our accomplishments. In general family terms, we just want our family members to be safe, healthy, and happy. That's why the family is the basis of society. Because from that basis, sure, corporations will exist. Sure, governments will exist. Sure, all these facilities we require to maintain multiple families need to exist. Therefore, the family is the basis of all society. And when I act within the family atmosphere, even when it's not within the same biological family, I feel more like me. When I'm acting within the corporate atmosphere, I may do a great job, but I don't feel like me. This is a very important psychological and emotional consciousness to maintain, this awareness of this specific distinction. Because you know, while you are acting within the corporate structure, it is not you. I mean, naturally, when you're within the familial structure also, it is also not you, but it's an awful lot more you than it is when you're just working in this profit-oriented organization. Well, now, hold on a second, you may say. That's not necessarily so. There are many people who just care about money and power and nothing else. So their identity is firmly and completely fixed in that way of being. So in that case, one looks to another cause. What is this lust? What is this greed that a person thinks they need to establish their identity? It's not connected to themselves, really. It's truly imposter existence, where they are something completely not themselves for the sake of something else that they are compensating for. The point I am making is that when we are trying to become spiritually aware, we're trying to come in direct contact, direct realization, direct experience of the self in its pure form. So when we are acting in some other way, acting, imposter and acting, pretty similar. When we are acting in some other way, pretending in some form or another, for whatever reason, we are further away from self-spiritual experience. So between these two atmospheres within which one can live in a spiritual way, the corporate one pushes us further away, whereas the familial one is a better alternative. Not perfect, but much better alternative. Now, someone may say, rightfully so, that, well, that's also not perfect. So the real best way to be is simply alone, where you're not deviated by corporations, you're not deviated by families, you're just you in the nature. Well, that's not going to happen. We're not going to be like that. We are social animals. We are social people. We require to be around others, even when it is not the greatest experience. We still need people. Yet at the same time, if we wish to assist, to be of service, and help others to attain spiritual realization, there needs to be some kind of way to do that. That's why I've said it before, Bhaktivinod Thakur's Namhata program was the perfection of interfacing spiritual propagation and the individual's requirement. Now, sometimes people wonder about me, like, what are you doing? What do you think you're doing? Well, what I think I'm doing is I'm trying to bring the focus to you, that you are the focus. You are the center. You are the most important personality in this spiritual experience. That's why I don't like to get involved in very vast discussions about historical personalities or, you know, specific practices that have been or whatever that take the focus away from how you feel, how you perceive, how you can act to find your spiritual essence and embrace it and live by it. It's just me sharing how I think, sharing how I feel to you without any demand, without any expectation from you. I don't need you to act a certain way, to dress a certain way, to think a certain way, eat a certain way, work a certain way, make certain kinds of money, do certain kind of accomplishments, get your name on a newsletter. I don't require that. I want you to be healthy, happy, safe, and spiritually aware. If you were here, I'd like to feed you something. We can stand before the deities together and embrace their divine energy. We could sing together. We could meditate together. We could laugh together. The point being, it's kind of like a family. We're not a corporation. That's really important. And I am sure, without me having to tell you, without me having to ask you, that each and every one of you share your spiritual realization with others whenever the opportunity arises. I just know it's so. Because that's your nature. If you didn't feel like that, you wouldn't even bother coming here to this Zoom. I go out of my way to not impose on you anything other than what's already within you. I am consciously avoiding, insisting you be in any way. I am consciously avoiding using terms or phrases that I have inherited from a tradition which will make you feel you should be like that. Sometimes people, they say to me, why don't you tell stories from the Shastra? Why don't you preach according to the Shastra? And I say, well, first of all, stories are stories, and I don't preach. I'm trying to awaken the individual. It's a fine line when you act like this, because at what point are you just like babbling? What I try to do is find universal principles that address the essence of who we are and our existence within this realm. In other words, if something is true, it's true for me, it's true for every single living entity. It's not that truth is only there for people who believe a certain tradition. Our perception, our experiences, our capacity to understand the spiritual energy which within all of us have as the basis of our consciousness is a universal truth. Now, I don't at all feel this imposter thing or feel fake it till you make it. I don't have any conception of me trying to be something I'm not. Right now, nothing, zero, nothing. For me, this is a freedom, spiritual freedom. So I offer it here, take. At the point at which you say, yeah, enough of this babble, and you do something else, then do that. I'm fine with that. If you feel, hey, this helps, hey, I like it, hey, I feel good about it, that's fantastic. So the reason I'm explaining this is because I guess what I am doing is trying to explain the basis or the underlying motivation for me to break away from ISKCON, the underlying motivation for me to break away from all of those things which made that tradition what it was, and just to establish a direct connection between me, the deity, me, and you. Nothing in between. Now, I know me doing this drives some people crazy, but I thought it was necessary for me to just lay out precisely why. It's not a madness, it's a strategy. I mean, sometimes people come and visit me that I haven't seen in 30 years even, or something like that. And they require that I go, please accept my humble obeisances, that you bow down or whatever, that it's then the next statement you have to say is all glories to Srila Prabhupada. You have to preface many things with Hari Bols, and you have to have all of the details in order before you could be accepted as one of us. And I don't do any of that. I just don't respond. It drives them crazy. There's only one thing they can think of when this happens. You are against. You're either for or you're against. There's nothing else. I'm not against. I just don't do that. If I don't do that, does that mean I have no love for Radha and Krishna? Some people even assumed I was a meat-eating, beer-drinking carny. I mean, really, seriously. Sometimes when I'm feeling very snarky, which is a very English term, I say, Yeah, I admit it. Well, yeah. Well, I've been a vegan for 20 years now, so, that makes me a meat-eating. And beer, well, no, sorry, I have celiac, so I can't take the gluten and, I don't tell them about my deities. If they come here, they never know I have a temple room. Because if they go in my temple room, all they do is criticize. So better they don't come. I find it phenomenal that the idea of targeting, or shall we say, focusing on a localized situation, localized individual who's right in front of me, can be somehow or another troublesome. I find that fantastic. But then again, someone may say, but then we're not going to have a global, worldwide organization that takes over the world. No, we're not. We're going to have localized a couple of people who are sincerely developing themselves as spiritualists who will share that with others. Anyway, you know, this is what happens to me when people come and visit and we have these discussions that go on for hours. You know, I get, I kind of like realize that there's nothing wrong with what we are doing. Why do I have to feel like there's something wrong? Somebody comes and all of a sudden there has to be something wrong because it's just not what they think it should be. And when people come and just embrace the family mood of just us being us, sharing that devotional consciousness, it's just wonderful. And so I'm sharing that with you again, although you already know all of this, but this was what was churning inside of me. And like in Iceland, it has to just come out periodically. So, we'll take a break there. If you have any questions, which I highly doubt, because, I mean, after all, there was nothing I said that had any significance for you. But if you have any questions, you can certainly put them in the chat, and I will address them. I'm back. Maha, are you there? Maha? Okay. Howdy, everybody. I'm back. Maybe I should put the... Well, I can't. I wonder if you could expand the text. No. Number one, it comes to my mind that in order to feel healthy, one requires to consume a certain amount of bacteria so that the immunity becomes strong. Those who live very clean and totally avoid all dirt and bacteria are more often getting sick. Is this the same with the association, or is it the opposite? Wow, cool question. It's hard to speak about this when you have to deal with a comparison of people and bacteria, but I get it. I get the reason this is being stated, but I just have to giggle about the bacteria thing. Well, I don't think so. I don't think that is a valid comparison. I think we can do perfectly fine without being around nasty people. And after all, you're not around nice people who are nice to you all the time, because even nice people can be not particularly nice to you sometimes. So you do have that healthy interaction between positivity and negativity, between like and dislike, and between niceness and not niceness, even within an environment of people who are basically good. So I would say, we're fine the way we are. Just, I avoid nasty people. I really like to avoid nasty people. There, no good comes out of being around them. Okay, and here's number two. Just yesterday, I was thinking that the family is the only natural unit of society where people can be honest and be themselves. All other communities are mostly artificial. Yes, but I would say that there are degrees of community. Like, we have community right here. We're not biologically related, but we have a familial atmosphere in this community. So therefore, I would not say all other communities. I would say those which are not based within a familial environment are basically artificial. But that does not mean that all communities are not needed, or that they're not something that we can't deal with. We need community. So just try to do the best with what you've got is my instruction here. Number three, how safe is it to be with a person who is possessed by spirits? And in general, is it necessary to beware of such people who have the presence of certain creatures? Yeah, well, why would you want to be in the association of someone who is not necessarily themselves? Well, I mean, we would have two situations here. Somebody's personality has been transformed by somebody else or some other entity, and those who are carrying around some other entity. You know, they are not like, it's an association of them. They aren't nearby. I would say, generally speaking, avoid those who are directly possessed. And generally speaking, if somebody's carrying around some other entity, you can try to be of assistance if you have the capacity, or you can mention to them they should get some assistance if you have that ability to find somebody, or just avoid them, because you can't really deal with these unseen forces. It's too much trouble. Maha, can you translate Jayanti's statement to the devotees here in Russian, and then also do number four. And thank you, Yamaraj. I really appreciate your comment. But these are not something that I think I should bother. I should not bother. These are not statements that I think I have to reply to, but I think it should be shared. So if you could just translate. You translated both? Yeah. Yeah, one thing about what Yamaraj said is really important, which is that none of us would be anything here if it wasn't for ISKCON. So we can't just reject it. That's why we have this like dichotomy of, well, we would have nothing if it wasn't for this, yet at the same time, this has become a bit of a problem. How do you deal with that? So I thought I was trying to deal with that really significant issue by talking about the Namhutta experience, because in that way you avoid the corporate crushing and you allow everybody to be exposed to and expand the spiritual message. But I very much appreciate the appreciation. Okay, so here's one from Harshi. Harshi always has trouble with this word self-actualization. And sometimes I wish, I didn't use it because it's such a trouble. But we're going to talk about it now. 5. Sure, why not? So his question was, you mentioned spiritual self-experience in your talk. Yes, I did. Is it what you mean in a nutshell when writing about self-actualization? Well, I don't think self-actualization as a term can be expressed in a nutshell format. It is a very big, broad thing, so I would never try to say this set of words is exactly this set of words when regard to self-actualization. So when I talk about being all you can be, it's more in terms of like allowing to unfold that which you are. And when we talk about a spiritual self-experience, I meant in terms of feeling and experiencing who I am in spiritual consciousness. Okay, and number 6 question. You mentioned stories from the Shastras. I often get the impression that stories from good films often contribute more to my development and awareness of some important points because they are closer to me and more relevant to me. It seems that the Shastras are not so relevant for me, yet I like it. So what do you say about this? Interesting, because I thought this exact same thing this morning when I was thinking about stuff. I was thinking about the Bhagavatam, and Shukadeva Goswami is talking to Maharaj Pariksit. So he's talking about kings and warriors all over the universe because he's talking to Maharaj Pariksit, and Maharaj Pariksit is a king and a warrior. So naturally, because we are not like him, the point of these stories doesn't hit us in the same way as it hits him. So from that point of view, you might find certain stories impact you very deeply because they speak to who you are and they relate to your experiences that you remember or understand easily. That's why I talk about things that I have experienced, because what I experience and what you experience is pretty similar. So when you hear it from me, you go, yeah, yeah, I know that. So that's a good point. Thank you. Number 7. We're on 7, right? Yeah. Okay. Is there any meaning at all in this word karmi? Interesting. It seems to me that the negative meaning of this expression is artificial, since everyone, even Arjuna, acted in accordance with their karma. All people should somehow take care of their lives. Although you always need to find time to devote time to spiritual practices, people from time immemorial, that's how we lived. Okay, I guess I understand where this question is coming from, and generally speaking, yeah, sure, it makes sense. But I would like to address the word karmi versus karma. The word karmi is a derogatory term which has been cooked up in ISKCON to speak badly about non-devotees. So to try to elevate that into a philosophical concept is an injustice to the Shastras. And from that point of view, I agree totally that it's totally artificial. It's not something that should even be used in our conversation. And it's totally true. We all act according to our nature. We all act with the facility and within the environment that has been given to us by our previous actions. We all deal with consequences. And so we are all basically sharing the same methodology of getting through our lives. Therefore, we have to modify, we have to transform our consciousness into that which will benefit our spiritual development and allow us to share that divine energy with others. Number eight, isn't it so that Dharma is good for people during the certain period of time, and then it becomes a burden and limits the spiritual experience? I suppose what that question is, how did I get so fuzzy? There it goes again. Hello, camera, I'm here. Hello. Look at that. Become a whole fuzzball. So I suppose that relates to like the different yugas and the different dharmas which are associated with the yugas. So I'm just clarifying that here. Okay, and then that's why when you say the next part of the question is, that's why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita is saying, leave all the religion and just surrender to me. That's what I personally think about ISKCON and us. Okay. I would not want to compare these two things. I think that's just an incorrect comparison between Sarva Dharma Parityaja and ISKCON and us. It's totally out of the ballpark. It's like apples and oranges. So let's set that aside. But I would like to say that if one is being confused by all of the things that one thinks one should do, and this is causing a person to not be totally surrendered to Krishna at any particular moment in time, then yes, it is a good thing to give up. And I think that is the responsibility of each of us to hear, understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, and then make that decision according to what is best for our advancement or our continuation of our devotional life. But the context of that statement is Arjuna was in a battlefield. He was supposed to fight. He started quoting Shastra to say he shouldn't fight. Krishna said, all that Shastra is in the way of what you should do because I want you to fight, so just give it all up and do it, surrender to me and fight. That's a different context. So all of these statements, which we are familiar with, have a context. And to take them out of the context and to apply them in our own life is a difficult business. Not impossible, but it takes a lot of maturity and a lot of care. And with that, I'd like to say thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, as usual, to be with all of you. And much love to you and good health to you. And may you all prosper in every conceivable way. And thank you very much.